The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
And I asked someone today, which of two topics should I teach tonight? And I said, should I teach about kindness or teach about mindfulness of the body? And she said, teach about mindfulness of the body. And my hope is that they become the same thing at some point. But they are different. The kindness theme was inspired a little bit by reading about the last Grateful Dead concert. And as you read it, those of you who didn't read it, apparently the last thing they said on stage, these are not people who apparently don't speak on stage very much. And they've been playing for 50 years. And after 50 years of playing music, their last thing they said as they went off the stage was they said, be kind. Isn't that nice? And all that LSD helped. So mindfulness of the body. A nice little slogan that I have about mindfulness of the body is two parts. The first is come home. And the second is stay home. And I think of the mindfulness of the body as a kind of coming home, a homecoming. And I think it's hard to really feel at home in oneself, at home in this world, without being centered, grounded in your body. And then once you're there, even just a little bit, stay there. In order to do this, it helps to understand where you are when you're not in your body. Where are you? Do you know? They have signs, I've heard them told, they have signs in some stores that keep your children within sight at all times. Keep your mind in sight at all times. Keep your body in sight at all times. Sometimes if you really watch, where are you? Where are you living? Where do you take up residency in the present moment? Many times you'll find that you're lost in thought, caught up in thought, taking up residency in the future, taking up residency in the past, taking up residency in your resentments, in your regrets, in your fears. And, you know, in those involvement, taking up residence there, we're not residing in our body, we're not residing here in this wonderful body we have. And there are some people who don't know how valuable it is to have a body, how valuable it is to be mindful of the body, or to quote the Zen master Dogen, famous Zen master in Japan. He said, mindfulness of the body is the body's mindfulness. And I think this is very profound, because mindfulness of the body implies that you're happily up in the control tower watching the body, being mindful of the body, as if the body is separate from you. But the body's mindfulness is not so dualistic, is not so subject-object oriented. It's the awareness that emanates from the body. And so to be paying attention to your body is a great thing to do, but to relax, center yourself in your body and allow mindfulness, the body's mindfulness, to manifest itself as a great thing. The Zen master Dogen also said, in distinction, in difference from how it's many times said in Buddhism, he said that enlightenment happens in the body. Some people, Buddhist teachers, say enlightenment is an issue of the mind. But this tremendous importance, you know, of the body. The Buddha didn't say it exactly that way, but the Buddha has many, many statements about how important it is to be present in your body. He said that mindfulness of the body culminates in the deathless, culminates in awakening. There's no awakening, there's no liberation without mindfulness of the body. Some people would like to get, you know, liberated as a mental trip. But the thing is that it's all in our body. It's all here. Without the body coming along and being part of it, it's actually hard to negotiate this path of practice. And many years ago, I went through the index of a whole bunch of Buddhist books, maybe whatever I could find on my bookshelf or something, I forget. And to see if in the index they said that they had a reference to the body. And I was surprised how few did. Because the reason I did that, I got the impression that if you introduced to Buddhism only through books, you would not realize how important the body is. It's all about it. And a lot of, you know, there's a lot of great Buddhist books out there that are mostly moving ideas around. And if you move too many ideas around, it's a little bit like moving around the deck chairs in the Titanic. You know, the ideas are nice. Deck chairs are good. They should be arranged just right as you go down. Get all the ideas lined up. You know, just get them all right. It takes a long time. You can get a PhD in philosophy and religion, all kinds of wonderful things, and get all your ideas about the existential ideas lined up just right. Down you go. At least you have those lined up. Isn't that nice? And in contrast to the books, my experience of training in Buddhism, the years I lived as a monastic in this country and practicing in Japan, practicing in Burma and Thailand, tremendous emphasis on being present for your body, of being paying attention to your body, feeling your body, negotiating the world through your body, living in your body. And a lot of what you do that's not written about in Buddhism, in the monasteries, you do with your body. It's a physical training. And, you know, it's probably not written about enough. The rhetoric that you read about is often, in Buddhism, is often different from what you actually do when you do, like, you know, serious training. And I don't know why that is, but but the practice is often involves doing all kinds of things with your body. Bowing, for example, is a physical thing. If you spend a lot of time bowing, which you do in monasteries, it changes you. There's a whole psychological shift that happens. You just keep putting your hands together in front of you and bowing. Sitting up straight with your body. Walking in particular ways. Relating to other people. Those things begin to shift because there's a very powerful relationship between our body and our minds. And Buddhism doesn't posit a strong separation for them, but they do distinguish them. But in the distinguishing them, say that there are very strong mutual interaction between them. They're a system that work together. And if you really want to understand your mind, study your body. Be aware of your body. The body is slower than the mind, so you have a half a chance to see what's going on. In the mind, it's kind of hard to catch everything. Also, the body never lies. The mind can be tricky. Maybe your mind's not tricky. But the mind is tricky with the messages it gives you, the information it gives you. But if you come down in your body, there's a source of information in your body about what's going on for you, what's going on in the world around you. And as you kind of learn to recognize that information, to recognize where the subtle tensions are, the holdings are, what parts of the body feel hard and soft, if you feel what parts of your body get activated in different times, where the energy seems to be in your body at different times, Is it in your stomach? Is it in your heart? Is it in your forehead? Is it in your jaws? What, you know, is it in your spine? You know, is it in your feet? Where's the energy? What's activated? Where's the center of sensations going on in your body? And because our physical body is not just a hunk of rock, you know, an insensate rock. Our bodies are completely sensate through and through, full of nerves that can pick up a tremendous amount of information about ourselves, the environment. There's not such a strong separation, self and the environment. What we pick up through our body is the sense data that the mind has to use anyway in order to make sense of this world. The only way that we could, you know, live in the world, if we're actually here in this world, which is not always the case, it was Lily Tomlin who said that the present moment is the leading cause of insanity for people who are in touch with it. Well, maybe so. But if you're not in touch with it, I don't know what that is. Everything that we experience in the world, or we know about the world, we have to take in through our sense data. So we have to see it, hear it, touch it, smell it, hear it. You know, it all comes in. And from all that stuff that comes in, we gather it together in the brain and reconstruct it into our picture of the world and what's going on and our interpretation of it. It's a very creative act, the act of seeing. We think we see things, you know, it's so simple to, you know, for people who can see or people who can hear, it's so simple. But it's a very complicated event. And we take in all this information, and if we have blinders on, if we have preferences or selective process by what we take in, we only pick up a narrow window, a narrow piece of what's going on in this world right now. As we can relax and settle into the body, and the body wakes up, the body becomes more aware, body becomes more something that we're in touch with, then all the sense apparatus in the body, all the ways in which we pick up sense data, becomes available, gets registered, gets taken in. And we become aware of so much more. Some of the subtle little shifts and changes in social situations sometimes are picked up faster in the body than in the mind. You might be thinking about the conversation a little bit, or your mind might, who knows what your mind is doing socially. But if you're centered and present in your body, you can start feeling some of the shifts. A very interesting shift socially, or any situation, is you can be aware of if you pay attention to your posture. And to watch what goes on with your posture. We call it posture, you know, the way in which we hold our torso, our body, because in English we talk about posturing, and you know, which is an attitude, right? And so our posturing, the way what we do with our body, is seldom innocent. meaning that our posture often expresses some mood, some attitude, some feeling, some desire, what's going on. And sometimes it's if you're not really in touch with your posture, you can't see some of the shifts. One of my favorite posture stories, this is a long time ago now, but there was a period of time where this happened a few times with people. Maybe in coming out of my Zen training, sometimes I was a little bit too much, wanted to just be really present for people, just there somehow. So I would stand in front of them and just be there fully present. And as I did that, they would turn 90 degrees to me. And they'd still look at me kind of and carry the conversation. But I noticed so I'd follow them around and face them. And they would turn, and I would follow. And literally we went around 360 degrees. I guess I'm kind of intense. But what was most interesting, I'm very convinced that they didn't have a clue. They didn't know what was happening. They weren't tracking their body. That was part of the, what was going on was kind of unconscious, subconscious, or something. And if they had known, what would they have done? What would they have seen? What would they have learned about themselves if they pay attention to what your body does? Does your body express fear? Does it express disappointment? Does it express, you know, all kinds of subtle things go on. So what happens to you? What do you learn about yourself if you pay attention to what goes on in your body? So the Buddha, one of the first meditation instructions that he gave, when he gave kind of a progressive instructions for meditation practice, one of the first instructions he gave was breathing in, experience the whole body. Breathing out, experience the whole body. So as you breathe in, be present for the breath, the experience of breathing, know your breathing. But then feel your body, kind of relax into your body, settle into it. I like, for me, the image of being on the inside of my body and then kind of like having my hands clasped together and then opening my hands up wide. That's a feeling of kind of becoming mindful of the body, experiencing the body. For me, that's an image of something that just kind of at the center of my physical being kind of opens up and spreads out. And just kind of takes in the sensations and feeling in my body. Kind of, it starts in my torso, in my chest, my stomach, spreads outwards into my shoulders, down in towards my hips, and into my legs and my arms. Kind of opening up and feeling. That works for me, that kind of image. Experiencing what goes on in the body. Feel the whole body. And then relaxing into it, relaxing with the body, letting the body soften. The body can carry a tremendous amount of tension. And one of the issues around tension is that the more tension is a kind of way of becoming numb. The parts that become hard don't operate so fully as, they're not sensitive. They don't, the full range of sensations that can be taken in that part of the body aren't really available. People who are really chronically tense, those parts of the body go numb. It takes a while for them to wake up, to open up, and to be present. So, but to relax the body, the body then begins to show itself more fully. Relax the body, stay aware, and be here in the body. As we do this, one of the benefits of it is the body is a locus of a tremendous amount of pleasure. And the kind of meditative pleasure that the path of meditation can include at times, it's sooner or later it's supposed to include this, is physical, first and foremost. There can be strong feelings of joy, or sometimes people experience it as rapture. There could be more sublime and peaceful feelings of happiness, contentment that can kind of pervade the body. And in fact, the classic instructions from the Buddha is to take some of the pleasure that can come from meditation practice and suffuse it, pervade it through your body. So if you know how to be in your body and are grounded and settled in your body, then you can start taking this pleasure that arises out of a relaxed, concentrated body and then begin to suffuse, let it spread throughout the body. As it does so, it gets stronger, fuller. And it's quite something to have a body that the body feels content, or the body feels inspired and happy, or feels joyful, kind of light, present. What it does is it does a number of things, but it can start shifting our identity. If our identity is tied up in ideas, thoughts of who we are, concepts of self and other, we can have all kinds of, some of them are quite painful, some of the self-concepts we have, way we represent ourselves to ourselves, and we're swimming and living in these thoughts and ideas, to have the body become so full of contentment and happiness or settledness or peace that it's almost captivating. It's so interesting. It's like, wow, this is so nice. This is so much nicer to be here, living here, than it is to be living in those thoughts. I think I've been thinking about how I'm so crummy for years. I know how to do that. I don't think I need to do that anymore. This is really good. This is nice. Oh, but you don't deserve it. You don't deserve it. One of my great pleasures as a teacher was also many years ago. You know, some religions don't really like the body so much. You know, and the body, you know, especially bad is sensuality and joy and, you know, good feelings in your body. Like, they're kind of mistrustful of it. So this woman on retreat came to me and said, I come from one of those religions where, you know, this is kind of really bad, the body, and you're not supposed to feel any pleasure and all that. And, I didn't grow up with that way, so I was kind of amazed to hear this. So every once in a while, doesn't happen very often, as a teacher, I sit up straight, really tall, you know, to take my full authority as a Buddhist teacher. And then I sit up straight and I look someone in the eye and I said, so I tell them something. So I said, let me tell you something. It's okay to have joy in your body. It's okay to have pleasure, physical pleasure. And she said, thank you. Isn't that great? To have this kind of role, you get to tell someone they can enjoy themselves. And so it can shift a lot of things. It can shift the identity because it's more interesting to be there than those other kind of thoughts. We have an experience of ourselves which feels holistic, whole, feels contented, feels healthy. That's very different than what happens when we're spinning around in our thoughts. And that shift gives us kind of shifting our priorities, shifting where the center of gravity is, shifting where the reference point, shifting where the lenses through which we see our life. So much so that many people report that it feels very healing to do that. It's very healing to go into this kind of integrated sense of body and having the awareness rise up through the body and be kind of permeating the body, being settled in it. It kind of very strong, some people have experience, I don't know if everyone will have this, but a very strong healing energy is coursing through the body. I've had this, you know, I was amazed the first times this happened to me, where I just kind of could feel this kind of healing energy, or healing sensations kind of just kind of vibrating through the body. It felt, I don't know if it was healing, but it sure felt like it. That was the experience of it. So some people have very painful emotional states that they carry with them, sometimes for years and years. And to relax into the body and let the body kind of hold whatever is there. Some people find it very, very healing. It's not always easy to do this because the body is a repository for a lot of what we're resisting, a lot of stuff we've frozen around. And so the idea of coming into the body for some people means they have to go through a period of meeting what they have not attended to, what they have been avoiding for a long time. There might be long buried grief that's been sitting there. And it's not uncommon, as it was for me when I started meditating, of needing to cry. I was sobbing some because I had no idea that what was buried in me. And it came out of the blue, I started crying. But it rose up through my body. And this kind of very strong, compelling feeling, kind of physical feeling out of my body, you know, like, you know, to cry. But you know, not something I usually do. And in my culture that I grew up with, it's not something that you do. You know, but I only had grown up in some of these more expressive cultures. But so what I did was I went to my teacher at the center where I was practicing, and I said, I feel all this despair welling up inside. And he just said, all he said to me was, sooner or later it has to come out. And that was all it took to pull the cork. And then I sobbed. But you know, it rose up out of the body because I was becoming in touch, relaxing, settling into it. And as we relax and settle in the present moment, some of the ways in which we hold things in check, often for good reason, you know, because it's too difficult, some of the emotions, you know, as a small child, some of the things that children have to experience are just heartbreaking because for all kinds of reasons. I remember one of the first times where someone went through something difficult like this on retreat with their body and their emotions and opening to it, was as a boy, I don't know how old he was present in a car accident where his father died. You know, but he was a boy, right? So he didn't have the ability really to handle it or be with it, and so that became compartmentalized. And so, but the path of healing, path of being whole, we can't compartmentalize ourselves anymore. And so this mindfulness of body, because so much is stored in the body, to become whole, we have to go through this. So even though there can be a lot of pleasure in the meditation path, sometimes it involves having to go through a period of being present for what's often been ignored, and giving that space. And this is where mindfulness of the body is very helpful as well, because the body sometimes can be a much better support for feeling and being present for difficult emotions than our minds. Our minds might freak out. Our minds might have all kinds of judgments, all kinds of fears, all kinds of, you know, in relationship to what's happening. But the body in and of itself, generally, is much less judgmental than the mind. The body is will not make up huge imaginary scenarios of what it means. Or the body is not going to make up a story about what this means about you, who you are. The body's just there. So much so that I think the body's just there. It's your compassionate friend. It's just there. It'll be present for it. It'll stay. And if you can stay present for your body, let the body hold it. Let the body kind of just feel it. You're less likely to spin off into the thoughts. And also, it's almost like there's more space to let things unravel, unfold. There's often very little space in the mind. Remember, the brain is smaller than the rest of the body. So there's very little space in there, even though there's all those nerves. You know, poor little brain. You know, it's so tight, everything. I mean, it has to do a lot of stuff in that little brain. And so there's not much space. But the body has lots of space. Infinite for holding all this. So there's something remarkable that can happen. Just trust your body. Come home to your body. Trust it. Open to it. It can be hard. It can be like the rodeo sometimes, but stay and feel it and be present. So it's a remarkable path to go through. The Buddha talked about some of the benefits of the mindfulness of the body are that you become more ethical. That you're less likely tempted by some of the strong forces of the mind for hate, for greed, for desire, for conceit, for arrogance, for all kinds of things. And he had some analogies he used. He said, if your awareness of your body is poor, it's kind of like a big kind of wet ball of clay, soft ball of clay, and you take a big stone, you throw it at it, it'll somehow just make an imprint. It'll just kind of, you know, break up that, you know. But if you have a strong sense of the body, then the stone won't make an impact at all. Or another example was that of with strong sense. If you have a strong sense of your body, then a lot of the fears, the strong greeds, the desires, and also the impact the world has of you, what goes on around you in your world, what other people say and do, he said, it would be like a ball of thread that's thrown against a really heavy, solid wooden door. So you know, it's not going to hurt the door. So if you have a lot of a very strong sense of being present in your body, all kinds of things are going to be thrown at you, and it's not going to impact you as much because you're going to bounce right off. That's his analogy. I don't know if my analogy is maybe, you know, I should probably, not as good as the Buddha, I'm sure. I think every different people have different metaphors, different images that work. And the image for me that works and is that as I'm more and more present in my body, rather than feeling solid like a solid door, I actually feel more porous. And as I and this wonderful combination of being feeling very sensuous or sensate, just feeling a lot of what goes on in my body, but at the same time feeling that it's completely porous. It's almost like it's empty. So if someone throws a ball of thread at me, it just goes right through. So I like that image. It works better for me, this big solid door. But you can choose yours if you like. So how do you practice mindfulness of the body? I think it's helpful not to think of it as being a difficult task. It's mostly a simple thing of noticing what your body's feeling. What are the sensations in your body? What's happening in your chest, in your torso? What's happening in your face? What are you doing with your hands? What's happening in your hands? What's happening in your body? Just asking that question and checking in. What's going on with the body? It can be so simple. I used to do it a lot in the old days when we had, you know, real phones. When the phone would ring, I would let it ring for a while. And 4 or 5 rings. Nowadays, you know, people don't have patience. But for a while, and during that time, I would check in with my body, check in with myself. And I would get information about how I was that would support me in the conversation on the phone. Because I was more aware of myself. So it's not like difficult. It's not like a big complicated thing. It just means, but it's complicated. What's difficult is doing it. What it is not difficult to do. It's just checking in. What do you feel here? What do you feel here? And then if you can, once you start feeling what goes on in your body, take the time to relax. Recognize what's happening, feel what's happening, and relax. Those three steps. Recognize what's happening in your body, then that's more mental. Then feel it, that's physical. And don't feel it as if you're feeling it from the head. See if you can feel it from the body. So a little expression that I like is how's your body experiencing what's happening? So rather than, if you say, how are you experiencing it, then you maybe too easily give priority to your mind's ideas, your thoughts. But if I ask, how's your body experiencing it, then, you know, oh, my body. That's different than my mind. And then you maybe kind of tune into what's there. So these are the three steps that I like to think about for coming home to the body, practicing with the body, is recognize what's happening, feel what's happening, and then relax. It's a great thing to do. And finally, I'd like to say that two things, quotes from the Buddha. He said, to simply learn a lot about the Dharma and speak it doesn't count for much. But even if you don't learn much about the Dharma, but you see the Dharma in your body, that's what counts. So the body is the locus, the location for understanding the Dharma. The other quote is not from actually from the Buddha, but after the Buddha died, someone went to his right-hand disciple, a monk named Ananda, spent many, many years with him as his attendant, heard all his teachings. This person asked Ananda, well, now that the master is dead, the Buddha is dead, who's going to be our teacher now? That's reasonable, right? And Ananda said, now that the Buddha is dead, our teacher is mindfulness of the body. Isn't that quite a powerful statement? The mindfulness of the body is equivalent to the Buddha. your body? That's the good news. If you want to find the meet the Buddha, go inside. It's right here. So those are my thoughts. I hope a little bit of that didn't just bounce off your oak doors. And a little bit of it maybe has encouraged you to spend some time. Maybe it can be a theme that you use as you go through this week, is your body. Just think body, body, body. What's going on with the body? Come back to your body. What happens? What do you learn about yourself? If for a week, you just, whenever you can, you know, put a note on your mirror, body. Put a note on your steering wheel, body. You know, wherever you can, just remind. Just come back. What do you learn about yourself? What do you discover? And for me, mindfulness of the body has opened up riches. It's a tremendous thing. It's one of the best things that happened to me in practice, is discovering, being more and more present in my body. So we have a couple of minutes. Any comments, questions, clarifications?
I'm a massage therapist, and I spent today massaging retired Catholic priests. And I've been doing this for 5 years. And at first I thought, oh my gosh, these gentlemen have never been touched. How am I going to do this? And one by one, once they try it, you know, there's all this hesitation. And then once they have the experience and they let themselves feel the pleasure, then they come back. I haven't lost anybody.
Nice. So straight back behind you.
I think I know what mindfulness of the body means, but I have a chronic condition like neuropathy, and I'm mindful of it and of it progressing. And I'm mindful of, you know, the pinpricks in my feet. I'm mindful of it shift, you know, now in my left leg. I'm mindful of a certain terror in my heart. Not really in my thoughts, but just a collapsing of hope around it, and it's, you know, it's a very mindful activity to be noticing, and I don't find that a place of pleasure or healing at all.
Yes, I can understand that. But can it be? Does it protect you?
What does?
To be aware of the terror in your heart. Is it better for you in the big long term to know that, or to let it operate unknown, unattended to?
I'm thinking of that. Because on one hand, there is a certain Buddhist thing where you say, and this too will pass. Or just like you say, it's going to be okay. It's okay now. You know, and all the conditions are here for your happiness. And they're met already. You know, and yet I have that, you know, ache.
Yeah.
And fear of this is getting worse.
Yeah, yeah, I can understand that. It makes sense. And you want to be a little bit careful not to use some of the Buddhist little slogans and teachings as a way to kind of cover it over or kind of step aside from it. There's something very profound about not having some idea of it's going to be okay, it'll pass, but really trust and open up to what's really going on for you, the fear and the terror, and learn how to go through it rather than kind of cover it over or kind of make it nice or something. What you're going through is very difficult. And sometimes it's very important to get a break from the body, get a break from all that, and not always be in it, for sure. And it's wise occasionally to check out from the body. The Buddha did that. He says he did that when he was very old. He said when he was, you know, 80 years old, he said he was in a lot of pain. He said his body was barely held together. And the only time he got relief from his physical challenges was in deep meditation, you know, really deep meditation. So sometimes it's important to have that. And sometimes it's really important when you go through it, some of life's biggest challenges, to really be able to track what's going on so that your fear, your anger, your despair doesn't get the upper hand. And you learn to kind of open to those and then relax and find a way through them to the other side. And yes, your body, you know, everything you're feeling in your body is impermanent. It's going to change. It doesn't mean it changes for the better. I mean, it's, you know, but what can really change, what really makes a difference, is there's a way of finding peace, even with physical pain and difficulty. And so what's the path of peace with it? And what role does mindfulness of the body have for you in it? And what way does it support you, and what way doesn't it support you? The first thing that I thought of when you talked about the neuropathy, I guess, of the legs, is I've known people who've had tremendous physical difficulties, and they found that by being very mindful and attentive in the present moment for it, that they learned to make the subtle adjustments so they can better keep their balance, better kind of find their way, make the step that keeps supporting them. And they really depended on that mindfulness to kind of live their, you know, more balanced life. And I know for me that I've had some strong physical challenges at times with a lot of pain. And I had to, be very present in my body for those experiences, because I found that if I didn't, that where my mind took me made it worse. And so this kind of helped me. So I'm sorry that you have to go through this. And if there's some way that this practice and what we do here and me can be supportive of you, please come and ask me. And, you know, you don't have to necessarily do it alone if you're interested in seeing how the mindfulness can help you. Thank you. So thank you all. And I hope that your body becomes your friend. And if your body has been your stranger, please befriend it. It's been waiting for you for a long time then. Thank you.